Welcome back, dudes and dudettes. This is episode 113, 113 of The Anxious Truth. Welcome back to the show. Today, I'm going to interview a new friend of mine. I could not be happier to have this woman on the podcast, Sarah Doan Peace, and I will link all her stuff in the show notes. Sarah with an H, Doan, D-O-A-N, Peace, P-E-A-C-E. We'll link all her stuff in the show notes. We'll tell you to get to her at the end of the podcast. Sarah is awesome. She was introduced to me by a mutual friend. Sarah has been through the ringer medically from the day she was born, literally, and you have to listen to her tell the story. She'll fill you in on all of it coming up right now. And yet she has taken all of her medical problems, all of the challenges in her life, including being traumatized by these conditions and these surgeries and being placed in these life-threatening conditions out of her control over and over and over, in a term called medical PTSD. She has taken almost all of the tools that we talk about incessantly on the podcast and in the Facebook group and in my books and everything else. She is practically a textbook example of someone who reached out, made it her business to learn these tools, and worked relentlessly to use the tools to get herself out of a bad situation. I mean, really a bad situation, and come out the other side. Just a better person, an incredibly strong woman, well-versed in this, knowledgeable. She's done her homework. She's, you know, closing in on PhD level in clinical psychology, and her experience is amazing. So let's get on with it. I want you to listen to Sarah Doan Peace tell her story. She will inspire you, and I think she will hopefully encourage you to move forward in your own recovery once you listen to what she has done. So let's get rolling. I hope you guys enjoy it, and I will see you at the end of the podcast. Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I appreciate you being able to like make yourself available to share with the audience. You're going to have so much good to say.
Thank you so much for having me, Drew. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm super excited to be here.
Yep, you're very welcome. So just for a little bit of background for you guys listening, Sarah and I share a mutual friend, and that's Hillary Jastrom. Hillary is my book editor and a friend of mine, and she introduced me to Sarah, and I heard Sarah on Hillary's podcast, and she just killed it. And I said, okay, well, that we need to have Sarah come talk to us. Sarah, so much of my audience, I'm always talking about anxiety disorders like panic disorder, agoraphobia, monophobia, that sort of stuff. But my audience is full of people who suffer from health anxiety and who have legitimate health concerns and health problems and history with health issues that contributes to that. It contributes to panic. It contributes to anxiety. And your experience, I'd like you to, you know, tell us your story a little bit. Your experience makes you uniquely qualified to discuss this, because if anybody has been through a medical ringer, it would be you. And yet here you are, just incredibly positive, standing upright with your chin up, like making your way in the world. It's incredibly impressive what you're doing here. So tell us your background a little bit. What's going on?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that compliment. One day at a time, you know, and sometimes 1 hour at a time. So my background is that I've had 35 surgeries, and I was born with something called Rotter syndrome, which is an acronym for a congenital disease with a bunch of internal anomalies. And it stands, each letter stands for a different malfunction within the body, mostly internal. For me, it was first and foremost my esophagus and my kidney, also my vertebrae, that's the spine, and it led to lung problems, vocal cord problems. That's why I sound like I do, because I actually have paralyzed vocal cords from being draped for 2.5 years. I also have a family genetic history of depression and migraines. And after so many surgeries and probably a complete decade of my life, if you put it all together, spent in the hospital, I came out of all of that, yes, upright and positive indeed, but very much with medical PTSD.
Yeah, that medical PTSD term is one that, I will be honest with you, I've heard, you know, PTSD and CPTSD over and over and over because of what I do on the podcast. I had not heard the term medical PTSD. I was fascinated by it immediately. Talk about that a little bit.
So medical PTSD is actually not yet in the DSM, Diagnostics and Statistics Manual of the American Psychological Association. I am not a psychologist, therapist, or doctor, and I highly advise everyone seek their own personal care practitioner and mental health professional. However, I went to school, I have a degree in psychology, I went for my doctorate in clinical psychology, so I'm well-versed in it academically and experientially. Medical PTSD is a lot like your normal PTSD, if there is such a thing, except it is caused by medical issues and usually having been in a hospital and usually against your will for an extended amount of time. And Drew, when I was researching this topic for Hillary's podcast, I read a bunch of scholarly articles and I realized that medical PTSD really comes from having been in the ICU, intensive care unit, and or having been placed in a medically induced coma. You can also have it if you've watched someone be in the ICU or watched someone be on the verge of life and death. The important distinction of all PTSD, whether, you know, regular, complex, or medical, is that it involves life and death. And it causes trauma, and it causes miswiring, if you will, in the brain physiologically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that trauma definitely, some things are learned there that cause some thinking and behavioral patterns that are hard to address and hard to reverse and hard to get out of. So tell us what it feels like. I mean, what have you experienced having been through 35 surgeries and what you know, all the struggles medically that you've been through that leads to this medical PTSD, unofficial as that may be, and I understand. But what does that feel like? What has that experience been?
So there's, as you know, having dealt with depression and anxiety and agoraphobia, there's certain triggers, particularly for anxiety. And I personally feel like as much as I've struggled with depression, medical PTSD causes more anxiety because you get easily triggered by the sights, the sounds, the smells, and reminders of being stuck in a hospital, feeling powerless and against your will. And so for me, it manifests sometimes as control issues. It manifests as a complete desire to run out of a room if I see a lot of people wearing a bunch of masks, like we're living in right now in this new culture where we're all wearing masks to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And it also, if I smell anything that is reminiscent of anesthesia, I get chills up my spine. And the ding, 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 like beeps or some alarm, or if it sounds like an IV machine, or even sometimes if I overhear a sonogram heartbeat, which, you know, is normally a wonderful, amazing, joyous occasion, but sometimes that can trigger me. And when we're triggered, when we have PTSD of any kind, and we're triggered, it automatically sucks us back in to that trauma brain, impeding our ability to think clearly and rationally.
Yes, which makes sense because you are, you know, you're reliving those experiences, those memories trigger emotions, those emotions trigger physiological responses, and I'm guessing you have a very difficult time. Most PTSD people will say very, very difficult time feeling safe when that happens. Like you immediately feel like the threat is there again. You're living it again, and you're feeling very unsafe. Does that resonate with you? Yeah.
Absolutely. And my last surgery was 5 months ago, and it should be my last ever, God, I hope. But I spent a tremendous amount of time before that, prepping for it. I spent copious amounts of time in my therapist's office preparing for it because it wasn't the physical surgery that I was so afraid of this time. It was the fact that I'm now a 30-something-year-old grown woman, and fortunately my life today, for the most part, does not revolve around the hospital. And it's been about 20 years since my last surgery, and I didn't want it to just ruin my life because I knew that I was doing this to help my stomach and my esophagus and get my life back because I had become very, very physically ill, digestively speaking. But I was scared to pieces to have this surgery because I knew that it could potentially re-traumatize me. And so I was very adamant about being honest about it and going to therapy. And more important even than that, honestly, was being honest with the people in my life, in my circle, and the people around me. I think that so many of us that struggle with physical and mental illnesses, we hide a lot. We're not honest about it. We're not forthcoming. Maybe there's some shame. Maybe we don't want to be perceived as weak. And for all of the strides and progress that the world is making, I think there's still a lot of stigma, particularly around mental illness and things like PTSD and medical PTSD. And so what changed for me, Drew, is that for the first time in my life, I didn't hide. If I was having a bad day, if I was triggered, if I was traumatized, if I was scared, I said so. And to my surprise, most people were very understanding.
Amazing. So it's, you know, and I think you had mentioned something when I listened to you with Hill. You used the phrase that like started ringing bells for me. And that's what I said, okay, I have to have Sarah on the podcast. You talked about stepping up to face your fear. And I'm going to say, and correct me because I don't, can't live in your head, of course. But that when you decided to start speaking up, like I'm a little bit afraid today. I'm feeling vulnerable today. This is scary to me. Like that's incredibly brave. And when you say you didn't hide, like you went right into that fear then and spoke it and put it out there in front of you and experienced it. Did you find that was a radical change in the way you were doing things?
Oh, absolutely. And it very much helped me to come out of the trauma thing when I was triggered and to be able to differentiate between the triggering and the actual experiencing. Because I could realize that yes, I was triggered, but I was still in that moment, you know, in my living room or in my car or having dinner with a friend. And I was not actually in the surgical room or in a hospital room. And so it's very helpful to face that and to be real and authentic about it.
That is huge. That is tremendous. The number of people that I deal with and speak to and am in contact with that have experienced trauma, whether it's medical or otherwise, one of the sticking points as they seek to recover from anxiety disorders like panic disorder and agoraphobia, where I'm always talking about a cognitive behavioral approach, where you're doing your exposures, you're going directly into the things that you fear. It's that unwillingness, the feeling of like, well, I don't feel safe because of my trauma, so I can't face my fear. But you did that. You actually did it. You did face the fear. And it took you, you know, from the past into the present moment. Like, yes, that's a terrible, painful, horrible memory. It triggers me. It makes me feel terrible. But right at this moment, I am in my living room and I am safe at this moment. So did you find that there was the ability to separate those two things? I'm having a very bad memory right now and I can have that. I can experience that. But yet I can also understand that I am safe at the moment and I can face that memory more confidently.
Yes. Yes, it very much helped, and it was very much aided in my ability to separate the two and feel safe in the moment.
Yeah.
And so then what ended up happening is that when I was wheeled in to the operating room, and I was then in a hospital room for 30 days, my first quarantine of the year, I was able to recall feeling safe. I was able to go back to being in my living room or being at my kitchen table or being surrounded with friends.
Yeah.
And so I kind of reversed it, if you will. And that was extremely helpful. And honestly, I've always been, I'm going to say, a courageous, brave person. I've always done things scared because I've watched a lot of people miss out on a lot of life because they weren't willing to face their fears. And there is no judgment in that. I completely understand. But for me, having survived so much so young, I just realized that I didn't survive all that to remain in a life of fear.
Yeah.
And whatever I had to do to face my fears, I was going to do it. Now, of course, that's within reason. Like, I have a fear of skydiving. I have no desire to face that fear.
Right. Not necessary. That's a whole different thing, though. That's a completely different fear altogether. That's a rational fear. Right. That's a simple phobia. That's different. Right. Yeah. No one's going to make you jump out of a plane.
Exactly. My dad used to say, why would I jump out of a perfectly good airplane?
Right.
I couldn't agree more.
Right.
But when it comes to, you know, I needed to have this surgery. And to be completely fair, I freaked out a week before, and I was not a very easy person to be around. God bless everyone around me. Thank goodness they love me and know me who I really am, because I was stuck in that trauma bed. But it had to be done, because my quality of life in the preceding year and a half before this last surgery was so poor. And yes, I faked it. I got up every day. I lived my life. I did what I do. And I kind of don't know a different way of life. But when it came back down to it, people were like, well, if you're that damn scared, don't do it. And I was like, that's not even an option. What are you talking about? I have to do this so that I can get my life back. Because there has to be a certain quality of life, in my opinion at least, that makes it worth getting up for.
Yeah.
And that quality of life comes with not living in fear, not living in trauma, and overcoming things.
Yeah, and I think, well, you had a double whammy. So your quality of life, and I so admire and appreciate the fact that you are owning that, like that your quality of life was being diminished by fear and by backing up, backing up and retreating and hiding. But you also had the double whammy of there's a reason why you had to have additional surgery. There were also medical things that were, I'm sure, contributing to a degraded quality of life. So, I mean, you didn't have a choice on multiple fronts here.
I didn't. I really didn't. And I'm so thankful that 5 months later, physically, everything was basically fixed. And not entirely because of my syndrome, because when I was born, my esophagus was not connected. And so, consequently, it's like an hourglass. So it's always going to be a little iffy. But you know what? I can deal with it now. And facing fears is hugely important, because when we get too comfortable, we get complacent. And complacency is not good. Content is good. Complacent is not. And by facing our fears, we can move out of being complacent and move into being content.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big deal. That complacency thing. I talk about a thing called the acceptable bubble, but I call it the acceptable bubble. And people who are, you know, trying to recover from an anxiety disorder will get themselves to the point where, okay, I can do life now. I can sort of do life, but they don't push it the rest of the way to true recovery. And I think there's a parallel that you're discussing here. Like, complacency might get you to a acceptable place where you can sort of wiggle through, but you know, when you get to the point where you're truly comfortable, it means that you have actually faced those fears and moved forward. I want to ask a question about when you actually did get wheeled in and you did have the surgery, that last surgery, and you were able to find that sense of safety and security. I think it's super important to talk about that, because you didn't just think of that. You did that. You actually constructed that. You made that through all the work you did before that, the speaking up, the talking about it, the confronting it, the going into the fear. So people ask all the time, well, how can I just, I don't feel safe. Well, you can't just decide to feel safe. You have to build that sense of safety, which I think you did. Like, that work, you were building that sense of safety.
You're right. I did. And it doesn't just happen automatically, at least not with anxiety issues and PTSD and medical PTSD. I will give credit where it's due. I have an amazing partner, an amazing boyfriend, a wonderful mother, and an incredible support system. And I could not have done it without all of those people. And again, that also came with being honest and real and authentic about it. But that being said, when I was wheeled into surgery, to be honest, I was excited. I know that sounds weird, but I was scared, don't get me wrong. I was terrified. But I kind of flipped it and channeled that fear into excitement. And I actually took a selfie of myself in the hospital gown about 5 minutes before they wheeled me in. And I just found out on my phone the other day, and I was like, who the heck my old people are going to treat? Oh, yeah, you do. And here's why. Because I was excited to go be healed. Because I knew without facing my fear that true healing was not possible. And I thought I was just healing my stomach and my esophagus and my gut issues. But as it turns out, the whole experience gave me the opportunity to heal a lot of past medical trauma that I had, quite frankly, not dealt with, that needed to be dealt with. And when I was wheeled into surgery, I stayed very present, and I made sure to notice every light bulb and every smell. And when I got into the OR, I asked everyone's name. And my anesthesiologist, I think he got a little annoyed because he said, you know, this is Sarah, and apparently she has to know everyone's name. And I just thought, damn right I do, because, you know, I want to know who's around me. And I was so blessed because when I woke up, my family, all of them, were right there. And that's such a gift. And I know not a lot of people can say that. So I'm just, for all the trauma and crap, I have also been thankful, blessed, and fortunate.
Yeah.
And that's also a big thing in the fears.
And, you know, I think I love how you described your experience in the OR. You're checking out the lights. Asking everybody's name is just genius, to be honest with you. I mean, if there's any way to get in the present, it would be to know who's in the room with you. And I found it's amazing that the anesthesiologist was annoyed by that, but I think that was a really smart move. So do you find that one of the things that you have done is develop a keen sense of being able to focus on the present, focus on a specific point when you need to, a task, a concept, and stay mindful, slow, deliberate? You know, one of the biggest issues that people get into when they get into that anxious brain thing is they speed up. They're living in the future or they're living in the past. They can't slow things down. You must be, I'm guessing at this point, getting very, very good at focusing in, slowing down, being deliberate, being mindful. Incredibly useful tools, yes.
Yes, I'm better at it than I used to be. I wouldn't say I'm incredibly good at it, but well, I'm better. And one of the biggest things is that, like I said, I studied psychology for really half my life at this point, and I studied it in depth. And I was going to be a clinical psychologist, and that required a ton of in-depth studies of the field itself. And I've also had a lot of therapy, and so I've used the tools that I've been given. And yes, I sought them out to begin with, but then I used them. Because really, you can know anything and everything, but if you don't use it, it's not going to help you.
Yeah.
So I've made a conscious choice to use my tools. And I'm also a woman of faith. I'm a woman of God. My spirituality is very important. And so that's a big part of it as well, because I personally believe that there's something bigger and beyond all of us that has our backs, every single one of us. And I knew that God led me to this point, and if he brings you to it, he'll bring you through that. And I also am big on breathing and grounding. Mm-hmm. And those are techniques that anybody can Google, and they're based in science, and they're based in more of the right brain sort of things too, the creative, the flow, you know, more the soul level, if you will.
Yeah.
So grounding and breathing is super important.
Yeah, and I think what's cool about this is I love how you said you actually use the tools. I mean, anybody can learn the tools, but and you also, I think you acknowledged, you know, you didn't really like them in the beginning. Nobody likes to do them at first. Nobody's good at them at first. We suck at it. And, you know, so persistence, I'm guessing you have to spend some time like practicing and getting better at it. And at first we're terrible at it. We try something new. We're the worst. But
yeah,
the ability to say, well, I suck at this now and I don't really like this, but I'm just going to do it anyway because I know it'll benefit me in the long term. Was that your experience in the end?
Absolutely. And a big part of it is I started walking every day, no matter what. And sometimes I have to go at night because I live in Vegas and it's too damn hot outside. But I take walks and I become very present to what is actually in front of my eye at that very moment, be it a tree, a branch, a leaf, a house. If it's pretty, that's better. If it's not, that's fine. But I find that visually grounding myself is extremely helpful. And just not just looking at something, but actually seeing it and noticing the detail. And for me, that also manifests in counting things. So I'll count the leaves on a flower, or I'll count the dots on a ceiling, or I'll count the rocks I see on the ground. Counting is really helpful and therapeutic for me.
Yeah, that's a focus
because
tool.
Because it gets you in the moment.
Right, that's a focus tool. Like, I'm gonna just count these things right now, and I'm not going to worry about the thoughts, the fears, the memories. You know, they're there. They don't. Right. It doesn't drown it out, but, you know, it reins you in. It brings your focus to where it belongs. This is so good. You are custom made for this podcast, I want to tell you. Like, you are incredible.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm telling you right now, I guarantee you that we're going to get a ton of feedback on how helpful it is to hear you say these things. I mean, you have faced some actual, real, life-threatening things, you know, because sometimes in anxiety disorders, we, you know, the fear is real, the danger is not when you have panic disorder, but you were literally in life-threatening situations, and you've still managed to learn these tools and use them, you know, come out the other side, which is super admirable. Let's talk, like, what do you have going on now? Let's talk about that. I mean, you have a lot of exciting stuff in front of you, I think. What are you working on?
I do. Thank you for acknowledging that I did those things, because I did, and I'm proud of that. And I used to brush that off, but now I'm like, no, that's so that I can help people and inspire people and empower them to do the same, maybe in a different way. Not everybody has life and death situations, and God, I hope not.
Right.
But you can do it, and you can get through things, and I'm living proof. What I have going on right now is that I just finished a public speaking academy, and this is my second podcast. I booked my third this morning, and I have come to the conclusion that my purpose is to be a public inspirational speaker and share my story and share the stories of others, because I'm certainly not the only one that's been to hell and back in any way, shape, or form. And everyone has a story, and everyone has triumphs. And I believe it's my purpose to bring those forth, my own and others, and help inspire and encourage people to live a life that, like I said, is quality and not just existing.
Yeah.
Because we all can just exist. You know? We can all just meander along. But I did not face life and death over and over again to just exist. And so I don't believe that any of us are meant for mere existence. I think we should thrive and not just merely survive. And so I am working on the public speaking and more podcast booking and a website. And God only knows what else. I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited.
Well, I think there's a lot of good stuff ahead of you. And those of you who are listening, by the time this comes out, you'll be able to go to sarahdonepeace.com, right? That's Sarah. I'll put it in the show notes for this. So if you go to theanxioustruth.com/113, because it's episode 113, I'll link to Sarah's stuff. You guys should follow along. Like, she's incredibly positive, incredibly inspirational, and just a lovely human being. And we kind of all need some of that. So, Sarah, I thank you so much for coming today and spending time. I'd like to do this again with you from time to time, if you're willing. And, you know, I wish you all the best in all of this.
Of course. And by the way, it's Sarah with an H.
Yes.
Don't forget the H.
Gotta add the H.
And I would love to be back. And I'm so appreciative of you and your community and the work that you do, too, because you are such a positive force for people struggling with all sorts of issues, and anxiety is such a pervasive quality of life thing. And I know that you have helped and continue to help and inspire the masses to get through their own struggles. So thank you also.
You're very
for
welcome.
What you do.
And thank you. Those are very kind words. I'm just the messenger, that's all. So Anyway,
well,
guys.
Me too. You and me both.
Very
Thank
good.
You.
Well, we can be messengers together. So we'll come back. We'll do it again. And yeah, thanks for coming by. So you guys.
Thank you so much.
Yep. No worries. Let me just, before we end, I will tell everybody theanxioustruth.com/113 is the show notes. And then if you pop onto my social media or whether it's the Facebook group, my Facebook page, Instagram, whatever, if you want to ask questions, I can get them over to Sarah, or if you just follow Sarah, you want to ask her questions, I'm sure she'd be willing to answer. The feedback is always welcome. So there you go. All right, Sarah, thank you very much. I'll talk to you guys later on. See you in the next episode. And we are out. Okay, I hope you guys enjoyed that. I sure did. That was a half hour well spent with my friend Sarah. I hope you found it as encouraging and inspirational as I do. Sarah's amazing. If you want to get to her, SarahDoanPeace.com. I will link it in the show notes. Like I said, theanxioustruth.com/113 will get you everywhere you need to be to get to Sarah. Follow along with her. And before I sign off in this episode, I need to thank you for stopping by and listening. As always, I appreciate that. The support is always appreciated. If you're listening on iTunes or someplace where you can rate or review the podcast, maybe take a minute and leave a rating and write a little review. It helps other people find the podcast. If you're finding it helpful, they will too. And if you haven't already, head to my website at theanxioustruth.com/recoveryguide. Check out the new book. The reviews are amazing. Not that many have been posted on Amazon yet, I'm told. We're only up to 9 because Amazon is super slow. But the feedback I'm getting from the people that are reading it is, I'm super proud of this book. So go check it out. Theanxioustruth.com/recoveryguide. Essentially everything you've ever heard me say here on the podcast or on social media anywhere, just in much greater detail and organized like a course in anxiety recovery. So if you have a minute, go check it out. I would appreciate it. I will see you guys next week. Thanks for coming. And I will leave you as always with a little bit of afterglow of my friend Ben Drake, facebook.com/BenDrakeMusic. Check Ben out. He's a great musician. You will enjoy it. And I will see you guys next week. Get another chance. So go and live your life. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Push through the pressure like an atom bomb. You keep on dancing like it's your last song. Makes no difference if you're right or wrong. Now you're on your way. It's in the afterglow. It's in the lyrics of the songs we know. It's in these feelings that you never show. Yeah, you're doing fine.